It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if I have this set up right, we have Cynthia Hauswinter in the studio. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. And it was snowing on my way to the swimming pool this morning.
But you went swimming because you are brave.
Well, it was nice and warm in the pool. But I also want to say April 14th, first day of fishing. And historically, there's been snow on the ground.
And there's been lousy weather.
Yeah. Right. Although they've now pushed it. That's why it's the second Saturday as opposed to, like, normally it would be this Saturday. And if it snowed, that would be.
In New York, it was last Saturday. My son was out with his son.
Yeah.
My grandson.
No, I know.
Oh, Mark. Oh, my God.
Kind of cute.
Let's bring in Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. And just think, if it does keep snowing, it'll give us something to talk about for the next 10 years or so, because people still talk about, remember when it snowed for trade secrets in May?
I always say, the winter's not over till trade secrets.
You have to ask Dan Dwyer about that, because he had all his books and stuff.
Yeah.
And that first time that they
and
had
they
it.
They also had the canoe race that day, because I just remember Sally Spillane trying to get from, it was a debacle.
See, it gives us benchmarks, and so we just have to breathe and, you know.
You don't even have to close your eyes and think spring. What we need you to do is go out and purchase an edition of the Lakeville Journal, and right there on the front page, the egg scramble in Sharon. Color pictures of children without snow on the ground, the Easter bunny, and more.
That's right. It only snowed afterwards.
That's right. Well, no, because it does feel like this is the longest winter we've ever had. But in fact, it's not actually that uncommon to still have snow on the ground in April. And there have been many years when those kids can really find those eggs because they're brightly colored and they're in white snow. So this year, they had to find them in the grass.
All right. So with that, the lead story, I've been talking about it. Elizabeth Estey, she's not going to seek another term in D.C.
Yeah, and that's a shame. I actually was in D.C. over the weekend, and I'll say that most of this issue was put together by Janet and Alex Wilburn and Bernie Drew. And I got to just float in on Tuesday and take a last look.
Well, and Patrick Sullivan, who was right working on this Estey story, and of course it had to change from the time he started it about three times. And, you know, we were like, oh, will it change again? We think it's probably where it's going to stay now for the next few months.
But I'm going to throw this over to Janet, because Janet worked very closely with Patrick on putting this story together as it was changing. And we're happy on Tuesday that it didn't change. But do you want to go ahead and talk about...
Sure. Just the fact that, you know, as everybody saw throughout the media, that Elizabeth Estey was dealing with heavy criticism from both sides of the aisle on her handling of an incident with her ongoing incidents with her chief of staff's behavior and violent actions inside and outside the workplace. So it's something that, you know, she just didn't seem to realize from the start how serious this was, and has ended up with her latest statement, which you'll read here, saying she would not seek another term. We'll see if that changes again.
It's the sad part about this story is that when you compare it to other timelines, that's the damaging part, that and the letter of recommendation for another job. Those are the two damning parts with this. And unfortunately, I don't think we've seen the end of the story.
Well, if you read the current story yesterday, she did not give him a letter of recommendation, but she gave him verbal recommendations off talking points from a letter that she worked on with this former chief of staff, then chief of staff. So that is, something that I think anyone who... anybody would think was really not the thing to do.
Yeah.
And just broadly, because it is, let's call it an evolving story, and we live in a time where people just stop at one place. They don't. It's hard to absorb the evolution of a story. You form an opinion just based on the information that you have, and then... You know, then there's more information.
Yes, and as more comes out, we certainly should learn to be flexible and, reevaluate. But, way too much time passed in the handling of that situation. And, this...
We'll see where it goes.
We'll see what happens.
It will write its own history. It really will. It has a life of its own.
It will, and already people are putting their hats in the ring for the 5th District seat, and Mary Glassman from Simsbury has stepped up and as I've heard people say, it would be nice if another woman could fill that seat, but, you know, if we have a qualified person who would handle their staff better, that would be great.
I did post that if SD resigned, that someone like Roberta Willis should be sent in to fill the remaining time on the seat, even though it's under a year. I mean, and we have other qualified women in Connecticut as well that could do that. And yes, you're right, that seat should be occupied by another woman. The Democrats should put up another woman.
I would like to say Maria Horn Quinn would be a phenomenal candidate.
Yeah, there's lots of phenomenal candidates out there. All right, speaking about that, we'll go from Elizabeth Esty to Jonathan Moore in one of the more upsetting to me resignation letters I've ever read in my life, as he resigns from the Region 1 board.
It was a bridge burner, I'll say that. And Jonathan Moore, you know, I would say there had been a lot of tension between him and the Kent Board of Education. Kent is one of the last towns that still appoints their Region 1 representative. There had been unhappiness with him. The town of Kent is actually moving toward doing what other towns have done, following the early example of Falls Village, and electing their representative. And I would say it was directly response to their unhappiness with Jonathan Moore. And when you see this letter that he sent, really putting down the Region 1 school district and saying
the residents in Region 1, more basically.
And just saying, there's no hope. They can't be fixed. And that's not a super productive. That's not what we like to hear our board representative saying.
It's not graceful.
No. Not necessary. I don't see what this achieved from his point of view and all the years he had put in, because certainly he was responsible for the path Region 1 took at certain times. And, you know, how does that help anything going forward? But, disappointing.
Very, very, very disappointing. Okay, and what was even funnier, now, at that meeting, there wasn't many people there. They held off starting the meeting because they were waiting for Jonathan Moore. And the thing that I don't understand is the president, the chair of the Board of Education, knew he had resigned. So yeah. That's another thing I didn't understand. But we'll move on.
Continually perplexed.
Yeah. Let's go on to another school district that has some problems. Gilbert, they have a $250,000 budget gap.
Yeah, that's a big gap. And you know, they had they have more constraints on their budget because they had been in state receivership, and it's complex. But there's an interesting additional part of the story, which is that Gilbert had a very strong international program and had, as many private schools do around here. And Gilbert, of course, is a part public, part private school that's paid for partly with tax dollars, but partly with money from a foundation. And they had this interesting program where they were bringing students from China to go to this little school in Winsted. And the enrollment's been down on that. So, you know, I think it's a year when we can feel pretty lucky in Region 1 that it's been a fairly quiet budget year, and we can look at our nearby neighbor and kind of say, wow, you know, feels good to not have that problem this year.
All right. Left and right, we'll start off on the left with Bernie Drew and Nature's Notebook, History Done Right.
So people who know Bernie Drew, and I would say that we're all fortunate to know him, he's such an incredible person, and a very respected historian in the area, and one of his particular specialties is W.E.B. Du Bois, who was from Great Barrington. So we asked him to write about a talk by the Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Eric Foner, who's going to be giving the 22nd annual W.E.B. Du Bois lecture at the Bard College campus, Simon's Rock in Great Barrington, on April 12th, and talking about the racial divide. And, you know, very interesting first-person story from Bernie, not only about who Foner was, but also a little tidbit of history of Du Bois and this area.
And then on the right side of the page from Tim Abbott, Squirrels Tripping Lightly.
Tim got so into this. I've never seen Tim. Like, Tim is just a very passionate person, but this is part two of a gigantic story he did on squirrels and the large amount of area that they can cover. And he did all this historical research, you know, back to England and colonial days about which squirrels go the farthest and how far they go. So very interesting. Not quite sure what inspired that, but it's a very interesting reading.
All right, as we go to the inside page, I'm going to go and skip right to the great picture of Rosemary Kilty, her plans away from the North Canaan Elementary School. What the thing I loved about Rosemary and the way she ran that school, she mixed modern with old-fashioned techniques and really ran a community-based education system.
Yeah. When I first started covering North Canaan just a few years ago. You know, you have this impression of North Canaan as being a place with a lot of problems because we have the police blotter there and there seems to be a lot of issues. And then when you actually spend time in North Canaan, you find it's really the loveliest town and that is one of the nicest schools in the Region 1 school district. And a lot of the credit for that goes to Rosemary Kielty, who not only attended it for kindergarten to eighth grade, but was a teacher there for her entire career except for 1 year at the Salisbury School for Boys, and was the principal for the last 12 years. And very quiet, very nice person, but very firm and very open-minded. And so that you had, as you said, that old-fashioned style of teaching where she could walk into a room and every single child would just immediately stop speaking. A lot of respect, but also her respect for the staff really allowed them to be very creative, and they did a lot of things that were very interesting in the library with the reading programs, with technology that she, you know, they were pioneers in technology in the region on a lot of things. So she's retiring. She announced her retirement in January. There's been a new principal already selected. I would say there's already some controversy about that, and it's sad because that's been a very nicely run, very peaceful, very progressive school for all this time. So we will definitely miss her, and it's going to be a very hard graduation this year because for her it's been a lifetime of connection to that school.
And the region is losing both her and also Ms. Budge in Kent. I mean, those are two long time.
Right, Florence Budge.
Yeah,
also, you know, and both sort of nice, quiet, firm, good leaders who work well with their boards and with their communities, and that's hard to see.
Professional educators
and diplomats.
All right.
Who care about the kids. Yeah.
Speaking about that, Shaw's got a story about the superintendent doing more with less in Winsted.
Right. So again, the Gilbert School in Winsted, but doesn't. You know what? I'm not even going to go there because it's so complex. But Melanie Brady Shanley, the superintendent of schools, talking about their budgets. And again, it's interesting. You know, at this time when we have our Region 1 school district and we have the Winsted area that we're covering, which is the very complex school system, there as our schools are shrinking, the population, student population, is actually rising at their school, at their schools. And Brady Shanley said this is the highest enrollment we've seen in several years, with 1,027 students in their two school districts. So again, like all of our schools, there's a lot of cutting back, there's a lot of reduction of teachers, but in our schools the class sizes are getting smaller. It's a little bit less painful when your school's getting bigger and you're reducing staff. That's hard.
All right. Salisbury budget's getting whittled down.
Yes. And in this budget year, we're seeing a lot of zero budgets. And so we've got like 2 and 3% budgets, which in any normal year would be like, wow, it's only 2 or 3%. But, you know, 2 or 3% budgets. And so they're having their budget vote on Monday, April 9th.
And I like the making plans for summer bridge work. I mean, that's something we all shudder when you see that.
Yeah, Cornwall's got a lot of water and a lot of little bridges, and they've been, you know, every year they're doing a couple different bridge projects. Leela had a really fun time at this meeting because they got into this very serious discussion about, are they going to need to wear diving bells and, you know, heavy equipment? And I think they decided that, no, actually, they're probably going to be fine. It's not that deep. But, yes, summer bridge work coming up. If you want to know if you're a Cornwall resident, which roads to avoid, read her article.
And you folks in Lakeville, get ready to lose your extra mortar, whatever it is.
The Patco
for 1 to 3 months as they're going to totally renovate it. That will bring culture shock.
That's going to be interesting.
It's going to be a big change for me because I'm there pretty much every day.
More people will come to Sharon, I think.
That's a photo and a cut line on the jump page. They didn't really want to talk about it, but one of the staff members said, you know, probably 1 to 3 months. They're closing tomorrow, and it's going to be hard for me because I stop in at that Patco almost every day, but there's also a whole social scene there. Like, you know, Bullet's there every morning. Kevin Wiggins is there.
There's people that hang out and talk and they're out front. Absolutely.
That's where so it's always interesting to see where the party moves.
Yeah. Well, as a reporter, you know, I often get stories there because if I know that there's been a fire siren the night before, I'll pop in and Bullet will know, or one of the guys, you know, there's a lot of the firefighters will still hang out there. So,
and on Wednesday afternoons, people line up to purchase the Lakeville Journal there first.
That's exactly right.
And we sell a lot of papers at Patco. So we just found out at the beginning of this week they were going to be closing. So we've been scrambling to find places in that immediate area, if we could, where we can sell the papers. Right. On the Run has taken some more than they usually have, so they'll have some more. And Leslie Eckstein at the Green Cafe across the street has said she'd be willing to have us put a newspaper box right in front of her place so that they'll be available there, too. We're trying to increase at Salisbury Pharmacy, but don't have that set yet. But it's over 100 papers that we sell there, and we want to accommodate those people.
Absolutely. I mean, when people are used to something, they, you know, they don't really want to change it.
And once again, I'll just credit Leslie Eckstein for, the center of Lakeville has now completely changed, metamorphosed with what she's done there.
Yeah,
it's really true. We couldn't have a better sort of business in that old firehouse space.
Absolutely amazing. I want to go on to Brian Oler speaking on school safety.
So this is a funny story in the sense that normally we wouldn't do a story on a town committee meeting, but the Republican town committee in Salisbury had gone through a lot of changes and had at a certain point there were two factions in it, one that was more of a nationally oriented party, one that was more sort of the old-fashioned, you know, a little more centrist kind of Republican town committee. And the party ended up imploding under its own weight and falling. And there was no Salisbury, essentially. There was, I think it was just Mike Flint was the only committee member at a certain point. So they've reorganized their committee. They have some interesting people on it. And Brian Oler had taken some flack for not being at the two gun marches. And, you know, Brian is a very conscientious person and has professionally been working on school safety for years now. And so Brian spoke there and explains a little bit about, you know, where he was and some of the misconceptions that people were sort of spreading around about how he had been voting in the legislature. And I think that gun issues are going to be a big issue in this upcoming election for state rep. So I think it's important for everybody to understand actually where he's coming from and what his opinions are.
All right. The tax credit programs offered in North Canaan, also part of the story there.
Right. And then, of course, the Sharon Assessor's Office, totally disabled and elderly renters. So very important programs for many of our area residents.
All right. Very quickly, the Northwestern cheerleaders get a story here.
You know, you don't have a lot of cheerleaders in this region, and it's not because there's no school spirit. It's because the girls all have their own sports teams and are often super dominant. And so in Winsted, of course, the girls' basketball team did a phenomenal job this season, and apparently our girls' hockey team at Hoosie did a great job this year. So generally, those girls are not being funneled into supporting the boys' teams. They're generally supporting the girls' teams, and of course, there are male cheerleaders too. But because Winsted is a larger school district, there are more students, and they've had a successful cheerleading program. And one of our photographers, Savage Freeze, had taken some incredible photos. So John Torsiello went and did an interview, and we have a nice profile on them.
All right. Now let's get to the opinion and editorial pages. Actually, a two-part editorial, really, on news and newspapers, Janet.
Yes. You know, I don't know if people think of our little company, the Lakeville Journal Company, as a manufacturing company, but we are. And what we do is publish and manufacture things every single week. So this is part of what we do. And the tariffs that have been put are in the process of being put through from Washington are possibly affecting newsprint, and high tariffs coming on newsprint coming from Canada. Now, if anyone sort of thought that, you know, we would be putting tariffs for countries that we, you know, have this imbalance with and that, you know, we need to address. I don't think any of us thought about newsprint from Canada, but here we are, and it can make a huge difference to all newspapers. And we explain, I have the top part of this editorial talking about how this would affect us, and we have a guest editorial from Susan Rowell, who's the president of the National Newspaper Association, and she explains it really well. You know, if you think about the major national and international newspapers, of course they're online and many of us read them there, but they're also in print. And if that changes abruptly, it will really affect many companies who report the news in a very real way rather than just sort of the way cable news does on the ground and look what's happening, but rather in depth and get quoted all the time for their trouble. Then we need to be aware of this, and we talk about actions we can take if we want our voices heard on it.
All right. It's important. People just don't realize, I mean, the
importance. People really need to understand how things are made. The top line is fascinating, but it's enough already, in my opinion. Yes, this is what goes into making the cookies.
Right, and people sort of like to eat those cookies.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
We're still human. We're still human. We still have to do things, you know, not just sort of float in virtual reality. But anyway.
The international scene and the budget of the United States, there's all saying, think locally, act globally. Well, when you think of the tariffs,
you think global, act local.
Think globally and how it trickles down and then really impacts locally.
That was the bumper sticker, was global, act local.
The people in the Midwest will really know about that.
Yes, and we actually also have a column, funny you should mention that, from Letty Lister, who's a publisher of the Black Hills Pioneer newspaper in Western South Dakota, and she explains how it will affect her, and this is sort of a microcosm of how it will affect so many small papers that are really the source for news and the way that local history is covered, you know, as it's happening. And if they all disappear, it really will affect our democracy.
Oh, yeah. That's just not okay.
Well, just look around here, Janet, with news. I mean, you're the local newspaper that covers the local stories. And there's also now only one radio station left.
Right.
I mean, these are times where if you want us around, understand all the ramifications of the things that affect us.
Here's the good news. The kids, the younger ones, are far more interested in how things work than the millennials.
It's really true. And so I'll quickly mention, don't miss a story about a manufacturer summit that happened. It was last week, sponsored by the Northwest Chamber, well, hosted by the Northwest Chamber, and our Labor of Commerce Secretary from Connecticut was there. It was so exciting to see these kids who are very interested in manufacturing, how things are made, and what they can do here in Connecticut, and the training that they are looking at doing. So anyway,
And also the very important guest commentary from Kevin O'Connell at GEAR. There's a complex situation going on
and it really
in
needs
North
to
Canaan,
be...
and it needs to be rectified.
Exactly. And,
complex is the operative word.
Complex is the operative word, and this also is an ongoing story. But Kevin O'Connell is the chief executive officer of the GEAR Village Senior Living Community in North Canaan, and that is a good description of it because of, you know, the many ways they serve their community. And read what Kevin has to say about his view of the situation where the tax assessor is looking at flipping the not-for-profit status. And, you know, but it is complex, so read this and keep track of it.
All right. And before we get to Compass, just on the back page of Our World, more color pictures of the bunnies.
And more Easter eggs in our three towns. And also a really heartwarming story from Winsted about a group of students who spent their vacation down in Tennessee helping to get medical care to underserved communities. And really one of those stories that makes you go like, wow, I wish I'd gone. That they got a lot out of it, and so did the community. And Anne is here, actually.
Anne, we have 2 minutes, Anne and Anna. Woo-hoo. Don't worry, I'll get back to you sooner or later as soon as I remember it at 65 years old.
Hi, everyone. We have a fabulous issue of Compass this week. It's all in color, which I'm excited about. And the first story that I want to talk about, because I can only talk about one probably, is the exhibit at the Cornwall Library by Laszlo and
Ted.
Gyorsuk.
They just call him Ted.
Gyorsuk and Ted Roth. Mm-hmm. They've been photographing these abandoned brass mills in the Naugatuck Valley, which is also called Brass Valley. They've been working on making pictures for the past 6 years, and when they started, the brass industry was still happening, so they're really quite dramatic pictures of workers making brass things and with, you know, their masks, their headgear on, and sparks flying. Just beautiful pictures that could have been taken 100 years ago. And then when the factories all closed in 2013, they continued going to these abandoned factories and making these really quite beautiful images. So I urge everyone to go see it, and there's going to be a talk also at the Cornwall Library, and I don't have the date in front of me, I'm sorry, but
they can read the article.
That's right, and if you call the library, they'll tell you. Then we also have two films about gardeners and the art of making a garden. We always forget that a gardener is just as much an artist as a painter. And using the landscape as their palette, they paint with the different colors of the plants and flowers and leaves, And these films are great. I've never seen a film about how a gardener does his or her work. And the first one is at the Millerton Movie House called The Gardener, about Frank Cabot, who founded the Garden Conservancy and made an extraordinary garden in Quebec, and another one in Cold Spring, New York. The second film is about Pete Udolph, who is, among other things, the designer of the High Line in New York. But he's quite a different kind of gardener. He loves weeds and tall grasses and more natural things. And he really thinks about what the garden looks like all four seasons. Most of us just live with an ugly garden for 6 months and then wait for it to do its fabulous thing for the other six. And he thinks of the garden as a year-round thing of beauty. So his gardens are designed with all kinds of grasses that will look good in the fall and the winter.
All right.
I think that's
it. Is that
it?
Okay, thanks.
Good job.
A couple more stories.
Get the compass.
Excellent compass this week.
All right, and we'll see you guys next week.
We will see you next week. Thank you so much.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, if you missed it, you can find it online in just a few minutes at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.